What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Situation on the ground. Let's go live to Moscow with some fresh exit polls and Troy Iwata. Troy, what are you learning?
Desi, we're learning a lot about why Russians are so drawn to Vladimir Putin. Listen to these exit poll results. First, 94% of voters said they did not want to accidentally fall out of a window. And 96% said they did not want to be poisoned. So those are the top two issues, third being Putin's age.
Hey, Ears Edition listeners. It's Desi Leidick. And I'm sitting here with one of the newest members of our news team, Troy Iwata.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome.
On your podcast.
Welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
And welcome to the news team.
Thank you.
Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It sounded good.
Troy.
Oh, that part. The first part.
Yeah.
No, that's correct.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Oh. And then just so we're clear, it's Desai Liedjek.
That's exactly right. It's okay. German.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Liedjek.
Oh, wow. Powerful.
You swallow it.
And what does that mean?
It means child of God.
And aren't we all?
Aren't we all? Okay, so you and I... We were friends before The Daily Show.
Good friends.
It is Troy, right?
Yes.
Yes. We met on a little movie called Space Cadet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give the elevator pitch on Space Cadet?
Well, I'll just say what everyone told me. Mm-hmm. It's like Legally Blonde in space.
It is. It kind of is. And you and I play ASCAN trainees.
And if, for those of you that don't know, an ass can is not a can for your ass.
No.
It's a
We learned that on day one.
Yeah, it's a spatial student.
Spatial student?
A spatial student, a student of space.
As you can tell, we are not actual NASA trainees. We did no research
no
for this
research.
Film at all.
Why
whatsoever.
Would I have 7 lines in this movie? So I
No, but I want to talk about that because most of the scenes that we were in
mm-hmm.
were group scenes with at least 5+ characters.
Right.
And so oftentimes we would have like a line here, a line there. But Troy, you stole every freaking scene in that movie. If you had one line, you made the most of it. You had all of us cracking up every take. You were such a standout, truly.
Oh, thank you.
Why do you look so surprised?
I don't know. One of my lines was fire.
Yeah, but you... like...
Not even with an exclamation point. It was fire, period. Thank you. That's very, very sweet.
But no, but it's true. And I think like that is one of your superpowers as a comedic actor, and I think it comes in handy here as part of the news team, like in everything that you do here. You figure out a way of like putting your own unique spin on it.
Well, actually, like, okay, so we met on the set of this movie.
Yes.
Right? And we were in the beautiful state of Alabama for 3 weeks.
Huntsville, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Which actually was pretty lovely, but...
It was. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. And then towards the end of shooting, we were just sitting in our actor's chairs with our names on them, because mm-hmm. that's what we require.
Because we're actors.
And you turned to me and you said,
how much do I have to pay you to come to The Daily Show?
I know. You said, would you ever consider auditioning for The Daily Show?
Yeah. It's all I could think about when we were filming. And then we had time on set together, but then we spent an afternoon getting coffee and hanging out.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, oh, we could use your perspective here. I think you should audition for this show. You're such a perfect fit for the show.
Thank you. And I'm having a wonderful time.
Good.
But yeah, you asked me that question and I, of course, said no.
Yeah. Gross.
Why? That's disgusting. Why would you think that? And then a couple weeks later, I got an email with a self-tape. For those of you listeners who don't know what a self-tape is, it's a videotape that you make mm-hmm. by yourself home.
That's not porn.
It's not porn, unless you want it to be.
It can be. It can get you the job sometimes.
No, we don't kink shame here at The Daily Show.
No, we don't.
I remember I was sent like a packet with some previous sketches that the Daily Show had done, and they asked me to just pick one and do one, and two of them were for women, and one of them was for a man, so I picked the man one.
I was going to say, which one did you choose?
One of them was about abortion rights or something, and I was like, I don't think...
You're like, I don't care about women's rights. Get this out of here.
No, this doesn't speak to me. And so I did one of them with like a reader, and then they also asked me to write a desk piece for myself.
And had you ever done that before?
I'd written stuff for myself before, but not from the perspective of like a news anchor sort of type thing. And like, I was a little bit nervous because I definitely consider myself like a funny person, but I don't consider myself a writer, not necessarily a joke teller.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you are, but
I can make something funny. If you ask me to like make up a joke, I can C+, you know, but I'd
give you a higher grade than that. But right. Yes, I know what you're saying.
A low B minus. And but I also when they sent me the tape, they said, you no pressure to be funny. We just want to hear how you talk.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, well, that's nice. And then sent that in. And then a couple weeks later, I had a Zoom meeting with a couple of the producers, and then they offered me the job. And coming from a theater background, not to sound, I don't know what the word is, but this was the fastest and easiest process of getting a job that I've ever had.
Nice.
And I'm very grateful for that, and I'm having a great time.
All I did was walk away from set, and then I went to Jen Flans, our awesome EP showrunner.
Hi, Jen.
Boss. Hi, Jen.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for this opportunity. I went to Jen and I said, I think we should ask if... I worked with this guy, Troy, on the movie, and I think we should ask if he could submit a tape. And she put in the request. And then I had no idea what you... I had nothing to do with your audition process. I had no idea what you picked or what you wrote. And then I just heard back from Jen that they loved you and that they were bringing you in and gonna hire you. So it, and then I did watch your audition tape afterwards when you sent it to me, and it was really great.
Thank you. Did they give you a cut of the bribe money that I sent in with the tape?
I cannot speak of that.
Okay.
Because my lawyers might be listening.
Got it.
Yeah.
Hi, lawyers. Thank you for listening.
Hey, lawyers.
To the
thank you for this opportunity. Do you consider yourself a political person?
I will say, since getting this job, I've become more so.
Yeah.
Only just like, I feel like it's a pretty relatable thing to be exhausted by politics, especially in this country.
And, yeah.
But working here has made it more fun because it forces you to approach it more from like, you see the ridiculousness of it and you can laugh at it. That makes it a lot more palatable than like just being overwhelmed.
Yeah,
and
it
exhausted
does.
By it.
In a lot of ways, I feel like the show has become my therapy
mm-hmm.
because it is overwhelming. It's especially overwhelming to feel like you have to pay attention to every minute of the news cycle.
Right.
That's
there's too
daunting.
Much. There's too much. Because also, what is news? News is gossip of what's happening in the world. And anything can be a story. So you can't know what's going on. And also, we're not supposed to know what's going on.
It's healthy to take breaks every now and again.
Yeah.
And I think you do have to do that when we have little mini hiatuses here and there. It's healthy to kind of like unplug and take a step back. I was also not a particularly political person going into this. I did watch The Daily Show, the John years, for many years before starting here, and desperately wanted to be on the show and auditioned multiple times.
You auditioned multiple times?
I did. I did. I auditioned for the show 3 times.
I didn't know that.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Over the course of like 8 years, maybe.
Oh my God.
6 years. Yeah. The same process where you like, you get sent a piece that had been done on the show before and you choose that and then you write a piece.
Yeah.
And the third time that I was asked, I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this again, because it's a pretty big homework assignment.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way that you did. Like, I would write by necessity for myself, but mm-hmm. I didn't consider myself a writer. And I certainly wasn't really comfortable doing that at the time. So it was a lot. It was like a big ask. And the third time I thought like, oh gosh, I don't know if I want to put myself through this again. It was so heartbreaking when I wanted it so badly last time. And
yeah.
I think maybe if they wanted me, they would have asked me by now. And I just don't know. And my manager at the time was like, I really think you should do it one more time.
Yeah.
Just give it all you got and make a tape. And I was like, all right. And so I did. And I submitted. And this was when John was still hosting the show in his final year.
Uh-huh.
And I submitted the tape and I did not hear anything back. And I thought, okay, well, that was my chance. That was it. That's mm-hmm. it. I got to move on. And then 3 months later, we got a call asking if I was available for the show to come out or to start. And super
thirsty.
They
strung you along for 3 months.
It was like 3 months later. And of course, I was like, yes, I'll move there tomorrow. I'll drop everything. I'll be there.
Were you in LA at the time?
I was in LA. And they were like, cool your pits. We're not ready right now. We're just sort of like feeling
That's
you
what
out.
That's the email said.
Yeah.
Desi, said, cool your
it said in the
pits.
Subject line,
yeah.
Cool your pits.
Yeah.
And so we just said like, okay, well, just so you know, we're ready anytime. And then shortly after that, John announced that he was leaving.
Uh-huh.
And so they did not want to bring anyone on during that time. It was like such a moment of transition. But they continued to check in periodically.
Okay.
And so then I think John announced he was leaving. They started looking at who the next host was going to be. They locked in Trevor, and then they called me to come back and read with Trevor for a second audition.
And how much longer down the line was that?
So I submitted the tape in November, and I got the call in July the next year.
Oh, my God.
And during this period of time—
That's so painful.
It was a little stressful. And during that period of time— my husband and I had just gotten married and we wanted to start being open to starting a family, and I got pregnant.
Okay.
And so I get pregnant, I get knocked up.
Yeah.
And then I'm like 4 months pregnant and I get the call to come meet Trevor. And now I'm like, oh my God, this is my dream job. This is my opportunity. Do I tell them I'm pregnant? Will that change anything? Should I keep it from them? What do I do? So I went to New York. Mm. I did the audition. I met with Trevor. And then I waited in the waiting room afterwards to talk to Jen Flans and the other executive producers, just to give them a heads up. Because I thought, like, I don't, you know, of course women shouldn't have to think about this sort of thing. But I didn't want to start the job off with a lie. So I waited. And then Jen came out and she's like, yeah, yeah. You did great. And I was like, oh, no, I don't need feedback. But thank you. I just want to let you know that this is my dream job and I would be here tomorrow if asked. But also, I am pregnant and I'd be starting the job 4 months pregnant or 6 months pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, she without even batting an eye, she's like, oh, congratulations. That's amazing. We'll use it on the show or we won't use it on the show. Whatever you want. She said, we've done it before. We'll do it again. And
if Jen's anything, she's a spinner into something marketable, which is a skill.
It's a real skilled producer right there.
Yeah, it is.
But it was pretty awesome to hear that in the world of, you know, television and, you know, I mean, you know, the entertainment industry. It's not always I came into it pretty young and thinking like, oh, when you start a family, your career is over and that's it. And of course, that's not the way that it should be, but it often is. So that was incredibly reassuring. Mm-hmm. And I have refused to leave ever since.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Okay, so Desi, you auditioned for The Daily Show thrice.
Thrice.
Did you, in your audition process, come up with an idea for a character for your correspondent that, and has that played into your character now, or has it changed, or?
I did. And that is, I'm doing the exact opposite of what I thought I would be doing. So it clearly worked brilliantly.
Yeah.
At the time, I guess it was 2014 when I auditioned.
Okay.
And the piece that I wrote for myself for the audition was definitely inspired by Gretchen Carlson and Megyn Kelly, the kind of like Fox News blonde type.
Okay.
Desi Leidick.
Okay. Care to expand on that?
Well, I'm a Stanford graduate. I have multiple degrees. I speak 9 different languages, won 14 different beauty pageants. I'm a proficient puppeteer, a celiac survivor.
No, I meant to expand on your view.
Oh, no, it's self-evident.
I kind of thought like, oh, there's an opening to do like a female version of Colbert's character, and I would go hard into that Fox News lane.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the piece that I wrote, and that was the piece that I auditioned with. But then once I started the job, when Trump came into the equation, I think the entire landscape changed.
Yeah.
And it felt like, oh, we have bigger fish to fry than Fox News. Fox News is a huge part of it, but kind of like ironically embodying that persona at that time in the political climate felt sort of unsavory.
Mm-hmm.
And like we couldn't make that sustain itself for years on end. And so I would dip in and out of that character periodically when we needed it. But I wound up playing much closer to like just a heightened sort of like overly confident, underinformed correspondent.
Yeah.
News correspondent.
I think that's a layer of what we all do.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that. But then, you know, depending on the piece, like I would kind of, you try to create a character that's somewhat close to your persona, but highly exaggerated, and then you sort of fit into any situation with what it requires. Like if we're doing a field piece and we're sitting down with someone who is kind of a wacky, crazy character, you want to play straight.
Yeah.
Right? Like you have to play the role of straight because they are the wacky character, and there's no sense in having two crazy people. So so you figure out your dynamic, and then if you're sitting down with an expert who's schooling you, you kind of become the overly confident, underinformed, and then you play a bit of a character. So, yeah, it definitely has evolved over time. And then now in this stage that we're at right now, where we're being correspondents, but then also hosting sometimes, the hosting role definitely requires you to be more of yourself, which was an adjustment that I had to get more comfortable with, because I thought like, oh, I can be brave saying all of these things in character because I'm playing a character. But then once you take that armor away, it becomes a really vulnerable experience when you have to be more yourself.
Yeah, because when you're hosting, you're not necessarily even a heightened version of yourself. You're yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
When they first approached you to say, hey, we're going to have you host... What was your response?
I said, I'll be there tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I said, are you sure this is what you want?
Had you thought about wanting to host before? Was that even on your radar?
No.
Okay.
it never, starting this job, like I desperately wanted to be a correspondent. Yeah. I watched for many years the other correspondents, Sam B and Colbert and Carell, and like worshipped what they did and thought like that's the most fun job on the planet. And so when I started this job, I thought like this is what I'll be doing. I never thought that I'd get the opportunity to sit at the desk. And I also, I think having more of like an improv background and an acting background, my goal was never set on being a host of a show. Like, I just didn't think about that. But then when things opened up and we got the opportunity, I thought, well, I got to try it on. Yeah. Got to put my hat in the ring here somewhere. And it is totally different, but it's kind of awesome. It's like such a great opportunity.
And you've gotten to do it multiple times.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still very new, still like a new muscle that needs to be worked. But
when you are hosting, what extra responsibilities do you have? Because I know we have so many writers here who are brilliant and come up with things like that. But it's like when you're hosting, do you have more input on what direction you want the show to go in that week?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that we, even as correspondents, we are always brought into the conversation. It's very collaborative. And
of
I think
course.
The show always wants us to have ownership over what we say. I would say, like, when you're hosting, I think there's a little added responsibility and pressure that whatever happens in that show, you're sitting at the desk, so you share some responsibility in mm-hmm. it. And taking extra care and making sure, like, this is my perspective. I believe in everything I'm saying. And again, it's very much a collaborative process because we have such brilliant writers here, and we definitely rely on their expertise. But like, it is your point of view at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think there's like, yeah, a little added pressure.
A little bit, yeah. And I also feel like, I don't want to speak for you, but I will.
Do it.
Yeah. No, but do you feel like when you are hosting, or honestly, just being on the show, do you feel like being a woman plays, does you have to put it through that filter? I'm just saying because I'm like half Japanese and I'm gay and all these things. And just every time I receive any kind of material, there is always a filter of like, I need to remember that I am saying this as an Asian person or as a gay person.
Yeah.
So I need to know how that is going to come across because it's me saying it.
Right.
Even if I think these jokes are hilarious, they might not come across as funny because I'm saying them.
Right. Or you feel an obligation to represent.
Yeah.
People who you're speaking about, like, you don't want to disappoint. There was the ruling coming out of Alabama on IVF, and we kind of quickly wrote a very funny mini headline on it, and we were working it out in rehearsal, and as we're doing it, I'm kind of like, oh, this is really funny, but we're going to the jokes a little too quickly here. I think we need to kind of like sit in how messed up all of this is. And I had to sit for a minute and go, okay, I know, you know, 5 to 10 people in my life who have actually been through this. What are they going to want to hear right now?
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably going to want to laugh about it a little bit, but they also are going to want to hear some acknowledgement about how excruciating this process can be. And so sometimes, like, yeah, you do try to, I want to represent women well. I think we all feel a sense of responsibility that we don't want to let people down. And at the end of the day, we just kind of have to follow our instincts because there's no way we'll be able to make everyone happy.
Right. And it's like, we're happy to represent the communities that we come from.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But it can't be solely about that. And I have no interest in being the face of my community.
Right.
In that sense, because I'm not equipped. I'm not intellectually or anything like that. And it's like, I remember my very first field piece that I shot was the piece about professional cuddling.
As one who goes through life avoiding human contact, I wasn't thrilled about meeting someone who made a living from touching other people.
I have to admit, it does sound a bit scammy. Seems like you're just ripping off people who've never heard of a body pillow. It is not just about the physical act of cuddling. The body pillow cannot talk to you, right?
I would see the fact that my pillows can't talk back to me as an asset.
And I remember, you know, they sent me the breakdown of it in the pitch. And of course, I was like, I'm very excited because it's my first field piece. But I wrote back. I was nervous. I think I texted you about it because I was nervous because the take was like, our correspondent thinks that this industry is actually just like a front for like sex work and thinks that professional cuddlers are just sex workers, and it's just, you know, a front for that. And I remember emailing the team back and being like, this is funny. The fact that this is my first impression on the show, I don't know if I necessarily want my first impression as like the gay correspondent to be me showing up being like, so we're all going to have sex, right?
Right. Yes. Yes. And that's what's so great about this show is like, day one, you can come in and be like, hey, I had this thought.
Yeah.
And this is a concern for me. And how do we navigate around that? Or how do we change the take so it feels more in line with what I want to represent, what I want to talk about? And what was that like when you brought that up to the producer and you said, hey, here's what I'm thinking? How did that go over?
They're extremely receptive of it and said, you know, we'll tweak it before we shoot. We'll tweak it while we shoot. If you ever feel uncomfortable, we can stop. But they were wonderful about it.
And it just goes to show like how needed it is to have a variety of diverse voices in the room, on the writing team, in producing, in front of the camera, because that represents our audience.
Yeah. And the material itself wasn't offensive in any way. But again, it was just putting it through that filter of, I need to think about the fact that I am a gay person saying these things.
Right.
And the fact that I was like, this is my first impression. And
it was your first piece, day one, bringing something up, you were met with a very receptive response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
When you started here as part of the news team, did you think about the character that you wanted to play and how much of that should lean into your own personality versus like what you wanted to create for yourself on the show?
I kind of just knew that parts of myself would just make it into the character. I didn't really come in like method thinking this is who I'm going to be.
How much backstory did you write for your character?
Pages. And I learned that in college.
Yes.
No, I sort of just knew that it would like creep in. Well, first of all, actually, you were very helpful to me in both the audition process and my starting process, because
please say more.
Well, anytime, first of all, you were always very available to me to answer any questions, but you always backed it up. And I don't know, I think this is hilarious. You would always say, Troy, you are overqualified for this job. You said that to me multiple times.
You are a very talented human being. You're an extremely talented performer in so many different areas. And truly, yes, you are extremely qualified for this.
Well, that's a very kind thing for you to say. I will say now, I'm still learning, and there are definitely things about this job that scare me, but in a good way, and challenge me.
Same.
But, it was more of just trust the process. And I was like, there's a lot of very talented people that work here, and I'll trust that we'll all help each other. And I remember my first day actually shooting something, doing a chat live in studio. I remember I showed up and everyone was so warm and welcoming to me. And even when I was in the studio, they were like, there's four cameras. They're always in the same spot. There's two places for you to stand. That's not going to change. Look there. Have you ever read a teleprompter before? And I was like, no, but I can read.
Yeah.
You know? And what's beautiful about here is the teleprompter is right over the lens.
Yes. Isn't it great?
It's
so you don't
fantastic.
Have to look like you're cross-eyed reading
no.
it above the camera.
Yeah. It looks like you're looking at the camera, but you're reading.
But you're reading the whole
oh
time.
God.
Well, now the audience knows.
Oh, well, we can cut this out. Just
we
bleep
should
it.
Edit. Let's edit
Let's
this
edit
out.
Let's edit this out.
Let's not edit.
And then also... They were like, and also, if you fuck up that bad, it's not live.
Yeah.
We'll do it again.
That's
right. And I
was
like, this is great. And also, I mean, I've been working in this industry for 10 years, and every time I've done a job that's sort of in my head been on like a pedestal of like, oh my God, like when I did my first Broadway show and my first TV show and all that stuff like that, as soon as I got there, it's not like the magic was like taken away, but it was this beautiful experience of, oh, this is what I used to make movies in my backyard, and I did plays in high school. This is the exact same thing, but we all have money now.
Yeah.
But we're all, it's the same people, it's the same yeah. kinds of people, the same dynamics. It's just, there's more people watching us, and there's a little, and there's more money involved.
It's true.
But other than that, it's like,
yeah.
It's a very positive experience of just like, oh, we're still all like dumb, like theater film buffs,
yeah.
you know, kids just running around making stuff. It's super fun.
Yeah. And there is that feeling. It's one of those jobs where no one really sits you down to be like, here are all the rules of what to do mm-hmm. on this show in this role. You just are kind of like thrown into it because we're a daily show and we move so quickly. So you just kind of have to learn as you go. But at the end of the day, you are supported by what I think we have close to like 200 people on our staff and crew mm-hmm. that are all truly the very best in the business at what they do. And they've got your back.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you know nothing or have the worst instincts, they will support you. Like
mm-hmm.
you're gonna be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew it was a good workplace when the second I came in here and started working, I was like, I've never felt uncomfortable. It was always like
Not until this podcast right now
and all these very deep important questions. never felt uncomfortable, yeah. always felt welcomed, always felt supported. It's chaotic, but in a fun... No, but no one's freaking out.
No.
That's the cool thing
calm
about this.
Chaos.
It's like, it's a calm chaos. They're like, oh my God, we have to move so fast. But it's like, but there's a confidence that it's all going to work out.
Yeah. You know why? Because there's always a show tomorrow.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. You, the first piece that you did in studio on the book bands
yeah.
was so funny. And it was so much fun to watch you, like, even from the rehearsal that we did that day, it was like, oh, yeah, you're just, like, such an obvious fit. It seemed like such a natural fit for you.
But do you really believe these books are going to warp kids' minds?
Okay, well, actually, if I can get personal for a second, I am a living example of how damaging these books can be. When I was in school, I read a Japanese manga book, and look at me now. I am half Japanese.
Wait, the book turned you half Japanese?
Yeah, and why only half?
Well, I didn't finish it.
Thank you. And Costa and Ronnie were fantastic that day, I remember.
That's right. They were hosting.
They were both hosting, and they were both so kind and welcoming to me and very supportive. It was really cool.
Yeah. It's a very good supportive group. Did you receive the email from Colbert? Colbert's advice?
Yes. Not just for you listening. I didn't receive it from Colbert himself.
No.
It was forwarded
to
me.
He is not interested in any of our email addresses. There's no correspondence.
Yeah. But I did receive, and that was very... I actually received it from you, Ronnie, and Roy.
That tells you something.
Yeah, I had three people sent it to me.
So Colbert, at one point, wrote down a list of advice, a list of to-dos
mm-hmm.
for shooting, how to shoot a successful field piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that he wrote it and handed it off to Rob Riggle.
Okay.
Maybe, and Rob... passed it along to Al Madrigal, and then Al passed it along to Jordan, who passed it to us. and then we passed it to you. So it's like this weird, very weird comedy fraternity.
Yeah. And it's just like 10 points.
10 points.
It's very simplified.
He makes it seem so easy, and yet he was the master of doing those field pieces. It's not quite that easy, but they're really, really great pointers. Like, know the three things that you want to get from the subject and don't leave until you get them.
Yeah. I like that Colbert was like, it's just 10 simple steps. Also, if you're Stephen Colbert, it's just going to work out.
Yeah, it's just going to be fine. You're just brilliant at everything you do.
We're like, hey, Steve, I tried these 10 things and it didn't work out. And he was like, well, I'm very talented.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, got it, Steve. Got it. Thank you.
Yes, that helps. You've done a lot of acting work before.
Yeah.
You've been on lots of TV shows.
So much. And you as well. We're both very decorated actors here in the studio.
You were in a very funny movie called Summoning Sylvia.
Thank you.
And you are hilarious in it.
Thank you so much.
For the listeners, if you haven't seen the movie, it's hilarious and Troy is brilliant in it. And it's on Stars.
It's on Summoning Sylvia, now streaming on Stars.
You can say that again. Yeah. Is this the vocal warm-up you do before the show?
It's what I do Summoning every morning Sylvia. And every night before I go to bed.
Summoning Sylvia on Stars.
That's how I fall asleep. Summoning Sylvia, streaming on Stars.
but how does... You also were on Dash and Lily on Netflix. We Crashed.
Yeah, We Crashed on Apple TV Plus.
Apple TV Plus. Ever heard of it?
Ever heard of it?
You've been on all the streamers.
Yeah.
How does the preparation for like a more traditional narrative show compare to preparing for the stuff we do on this show?
It's really just time.
Yeah.
You know, but also just filming like a TV show or a movie. There's a lot of waiting around. Here, it's fast, fast, fast.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as a creative person, is more fun.
It is. And then you go onto a set, like when we worked on the movie, it was like, wait, why are we waiting so long?
But that's just, you know, and you know, that's, you all, we go in knowing that we're going to be sitting and waiting for a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really just it. It's time. For all of you listening, I'm not the actor you want to interview if you want an actor talking about acting.
Tell me more about your process. For example, in that tour de force that we shot on TikTok last week, Gadoon Gadong.
Yes.
Okay, guys, we all know the boss got kicked off of Twitter and he's making his own social media site. So the question is, what should the site be called?
You know, one name that we talked about was Xeon.
Xeon.
Or Xeonining.
Xeonining. Yeah, that's got a nice pop to it.
Hey, you guys see Trump's new Xeonining when he called Whoopi Goldberg a slut?
How do you spell Xeonining?
Oh, you can't. It's impossible.
Any other ideas?
We also liked Gadoon.
Or Gadong.
Yeah, I like where your head's at.
Or Gadoon Gadong. Like you post a Gadoon and then get people to Gadong it.
Like my Gadoon got 400 Gadongs and oh wow, Don Jr. Gaboinged it.
Mm-hmm. Makes no sense. Amazing.
We were also thinking that users can reboing a gaboing, which is a gabonged gadoon that has been gray daggled.
Of course.
And for every 10 gray daggles, you get a delungai. And 10 delungais, you get a gal gadot and a gorded goo gal.
10 de goo gadoos. Yeah.
Now, when you were preparing for your role as a member of the Trump team, did you have to kind of get into that conspiracy theorist mindset? Did you do a lot of... back channeling.
Yeah, well, actually, I learned this in my collegiate program. And part of my process is I like to start from the bottom. So I like to start with, what shoes do you think this person wears?
Oh, I love that. What shoes did your character wear in that?
They just happened to be the shoes that I was wearing at the time. But,
sure.
You know, normally I like to buy the shoes. I like to spend some time with the shoes. I like to interview the shoes. I like to dismember the shoes and put it back together. So I know exactly where I'm coming from and where I'm going. It's important to hydrate.
Always have to hydrate in character.
It's important to keep your instruments lubed.
Do your shoes stay hydrated as well?
Oh, yes. I have a spritzer.
A shoe spritzer.
I buy it organic on Etsy.
Now, the line, Gadoon Gadong, gets a Gal Gadot. What kind of prep did you put into that particular line? Because that's a real...
Mm-hmm.
You have to do some real mental gymnastics mm-hmm. around that.
There's a beautiful acting technique where mm-hmm. you assign a sort of active verb to your lines, whether it's pulling or pushing or ringing or smashing. And
I'm going to keep this straight. I got it. I'm going to keep the straight face. Go on.
Mm-hmm. And it just helps lay a foundation and puts a purpose behind each line. So for Gal Gadot, my word was force.
Oh, yes. I see that.
Did you see it? Did it come through?
Yes.
Because if it didn't, then I didn't do my job as an actor.
Troy, you are an absolute delight.
Thank you so much for having me, Desi.
Thank you for pronouncing my name correctly.
Finally. It took me a while. Desi.
Troy.
Desi.
Thanks for being on the pod.
Thanks for having me on the pod.
And I'm so happy you're part of the team.
I'm happy to be a part of it. Thanks
Thank you,
to
listeners.
You. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
Drag queens save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good.
For a change.
Eight iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. New season now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.